Good morning. Good afternoon. This is Tim Harris with the Harris Real Estate University, and this is the opportunity for all Harris Real Estate University students and future students and everybody else in the real estate community to learn directly from the NAR executive who had his hand in on creating the HAFA guidelines, exactly what HAFA is, what it isn't, and what it means to your real estate business. Now, we are honored, and Jeff, and I mean that with all sincerity, for you to join us for today's teleconference. You and I have obviously talked quite a bit prior to the start of this teleconference, and we're going to do our best to cover as much ground as possible. For that reason, I'm starting the teleconference about 2 minutes early, so people are going to be logging on during this event, and I am watching the numbers pile in, and I'm nervously making sure there's no breakdowns in our technology, as I always do.
I'm monitoring at Mission Control as well.
And it looks like this is going to be a record-breaking call for us. So, again, Jeff, thank you for joining us for today's very important event.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you, Tim and Julie.
So, guys, in case you don't know who Jeff Lischer is, I'm going to just give you a little bit of brief background on who he is. But I think by just reading his titles at the National Association of Realtors, it kind of says it all. He's the Managing Director for Regulatory Policy, the Regulatory and Industry, and he's in charge of Regulatory and Industry Relationships, and he's also in charge of Government Affairs. So, Jeff, do you have to put all that on one business card?
Well, I think it's a little exaggeration, so the business card isn't as hard as it sounds.
All right, good. So, Jeff, since we started a little bit early here, it would be beneficial, I think, interesting probably, for a lot of folks to know really how HAFA got started. You told me about it yesterday on our pre-call about the meeting you were in, and if you don't mind sharing that story before we get to the particulars, I actually thought that was very interesting.
Well, I'd be happy to. Thanks. Thanks very much. And thanks for the opportunity to help get the word out on HAFA. This is a program that means a lot to our members. And that's a lead in to the history of the HAFA program. Back in 07, we started hearing from our members that the short sale process was just broken. So the president of NAR at that point, Dick Gaylord, assigned a work group for short sales. And they met one time in February of 08. And they had a lot of things to say, and what they had to say to me as NAR staff was simplify the program, get all the lenders to use uniform forms, to follow a uniform process, and to have deadlines. And I actually tried that in 08 and did not succeed. There's just too much diversity in the lender community. But every time I had an opportunity to repeat what I was hearing from our members about the broken short sales process, I did so. And in one meeting in early 09, I was lucky that some people from Treasury and from the regulator of FHFA, the regulator of Fannie and Freddie were there, and they heard my story, and everyone was nodding and going around the table. But the next day they called and said, come in and tell us more. And so I went in and repeated what the members had been warning me about in terms of the short sale process not working out. And what really got their attention was the fact that there were many stories where banks refused the short sale. 6 months later, they listed it after having gone through foreclosure, and they lost an additional $50,000 to $100,000 more than was necessary. So that's what the genesis of HAFA is. I'm sure other people were putting input into Treasury and FHFA, but I can tell you that all the problems that we identified have been addressed at FHFA. So I feel that we really got listened to by the government. And it's taken all of 09 to get here and now the beginning of 2010 to have the deadline for implementation, but we are finally there. And that's
and who says government moves slow?
Well, that's right. They moved faster than the private sector, I have to say that.
Well, that is absolutely true, isn't it? So in case no one's actually said it, Jeff, on behalf of the entire real estate community, all of us realtors out there in the on the war fronts, thank you sincerely for spearheading this and following through with it. It's we're quite confident here at Harris Real Estate University that short sales are ultimately the best solution to many of the housing problems that we have in the country right now. Especially allowing for a graceful exit for a lot of these homeowners that just frankly don't really have very many options left. So, thank you for doing that. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome, but I work for you guys, so.
Very humble. I appreciate that. All right, so let's just jump right in. Now, let's get to the let's get to some of these specifics about HAFA, and then you and I can answer some of the questions. Guys, if you have any questions during the webinar, enter your questions into the box to the lower left section of the screen. There are probably about 100 questions that were entered prior to the start of this webinar teleconference, And I've gone through most of them already. And fortunately, most of the questions Jeff and I had already discussed prior, so we're going to be covering those. Any new questions, any thoughts that pop up during this event, enter them into the webinar. Julie is going through your questions. Again, this is a live event, so you're going to get all the qualities and nuances of a live event as we read some of your questions. But I think if you guys pay attention, stay focused, stay intensely focused, I should say, for the next 60 minutes, all of your HAFA-related questions are going to be answered. I'm going to say this, too. There's a lot of misinformation that's out there right now about short sales, about HAFA. Don't know and really, frankly, don't care where the misinformation is coming from. What we're going to focus on with you today is clearing the air so that you can, frankly, put yourself in a position to help people. We've been saying this now since 2007, and I don't mean to sound preachy, but there never has been and never will be a time when caring, competent, and skilled realtors have been so needed. If there's a true hope for homeowners, it starts with you. The realtor that's listening right now, use this information to go out and help your community, help homeowners, make a difference, help turn this economy around. So just keep that in mind. It's a kind of a lofty goal I set for Harris Real Estate University, and it's a lofty goal that hopefully you set for yourself and take it very seriously. And obviously, guys, the more people you help at a higher level, the more success you're going to have, the more income you're going to have. So keep those things in mind, that we're going to get very specific and analytical on this call, but use this information to help people and use this information to help yourself. So without any further delay, what the heck does HAFA stand for?
The Home Affordable Foreclosure Alternatives Program.
Okay.
There are two alternatives. Short sales is one of them, and deed in lieu of foreclosure is another.
Great. So now with regards to HAFA, this is a question I had in the webinar, Jeff, probably, I don't know, 25 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to seem like I'm skipping around, but we're going to kind of get to the heart of it.
Okay.
Does a homeowner have to miss payments in order to qualify for HAFA?
Well, definitely not, but I think that the lenders are already a little confused, and I'm hearing stories that some of them are saying that they do have to. But they have to be delinquent now, or it has to be reasonably foreseeable that they're going to go into default. And the example I use is where they've strained and struggled to stay up to date, but now they're out of savings, and they've lost their job, and they just don't have enough to make the payments. They're heading for default in a month or two. That family should be processed as eligible family.
Okay. So, I mean, that's basically the way it works, guys. So please be clear about that. And a lot of you, and as Jeff just said, a lot of you are still experiencing lenders that maybe aren't familiar with the new HAFA guidelines, but let's just hope and pray that they do start following the guidelines to the T, and I suspect that they will. All right, so with regards to HAFA, you know, the missing payments thing, that's a huge turning point with regards to short sales. Obviously, that's going to enable a lot of homeowners who are worried about the effects on their credit, because a lot of you guys have been doing short sales for a while. You know, the short sale itself is certainly not a positive event for someone's credit, but the missing of the payments is really what damages the credit the most. And HAFA, again, getting back to the graceful exit aspect of all this, does allow someone to gracefully exit their home without missing payments, thus harming their credit. That is an important thing for you to understand when explaining it to sellers. Now, there's a lot of incentives for everyone involved with HAFA when utilizing the guidelines. Further evidence that the government, the banks, National Association of Realtors, obviously, and everyone is reinforcing agents doing short sales. So can you please tell us what those incentives are for sellers, for the servicers and such?
Sure. Well, there are three categories of incentives. And by the way, this money comes from the federal government. Some people have been confused about that. It's not coming out of the hide of the first lien holder. So first, there's a $3,000 incentive for sellers to help them move. They get a check for $3,000 at a HAFA closing. This is not for any short sale. This is only HAFA. Keep that in mind. These incentives have to be under HAFA. Then there's also a $1,500 check that or credit that goes to the servicer to help them deal with the red tape of any federal program. And third, there's a complex matching credit that is designed to give an incentive to junior lien holders. There's a cap of $6,000 for all junior lien holders, and there's a 6% cap per lien. And if the first lien holder allows $6,000 from the proceeds to go to the junior lien holders to encourage them to release the lien and the family from any deficiency, by the way, then the federal government will help pay for that on a 1-to-3 basis, $2,000 in the full $6,000 example.
So just so that everyone's clear, junior lien holder, what he is referring to, in case you don't know, is second mortgages. So a lot of you guys who have been doing short sales, where we hit, where we struggle with these sometimes is not with the first, because generally speaking, if there's one mortgage or if there's only a first mortgage, then short sales are relatively straightforward. But when you start adding second lien holders, then we run into complications typically. HAPA acknowledges that and is now trying to embed a solution to the potential problem right at the get-go, which is, I think, really fantastic. And Jeff just mentioned something else. So let's clarify this. Homeowners are not going to be required to have any sort of paybacks, no sort of promissory notes, none of this Mickey Mouse that agents have been having to wade through for the past few years. That's a sea change in short sales. I mean, as far as that goes, Jeff, is that something that applies across the boards, or is it just the mortgage companies? So, like, for example, PMI companies are starting to try to make demands. Mm-hmm. How does that affect PMI companies? Is there anything?
Well, let's go through the three categories. The first mortgagee, if they're under HAPA, they're clearly participating in HAPA. They are required to release the borrower from any deficiency. If the second lien holder receives an incentive, they have to not only release the lien, but also they have to release the borrower from any deficiency judgment. No promissory notes, no debt collectors, none of that. And then for private mortgage insurers, there's not an incentive. And we are hearing from you and others that this is a problem. And we are going to be – well, in fact, I've already sent a question over to Treasury this morning asking about – well, alerting them to the problem and asking if they have any plans for addressing it.
Okay, so Jen, I want to again point out to what Jeff just said. We've been hearing from all of our students across the country that we're starting to see the PMI companies starting to creep into the transactions at the last minute and demand promissory notes or some sort of seller contribution prior to the closing. I know you guys at Harris Real Estate University CDPDs have been running into that more frequently, and what you just heard Jeff say is because we and others have alerted him of the problem, he has now brought it to Treasury's attention. Bottom line here, guys, is when you're experiencing any issues with lenders, it is your responsibility to either notify us or notify Jeff directly so that he can do something about it. National Association of Realtors is our only voice in Washington, D.C., and we have to give them the tools so they can do their job. Now, the next – so lenders, there's lots of confusion about lenders that are participating. Is there – I get all the lenders that are participating are all the lenders that participated in HAMP originally. That doesn't necessarily unconfuse things. But
well, no, it doesn't, but but it should help. I'm sorry. Were you ready?
Yeah, well, go ahead.
Okay. So servicers, you know, we say lenders. Technically, it's servicers, so we can use the term interchangeably because most lenders hire a servicer, which is maybe the division of the Wells Fargo that is a servicer, for just to pick one example. So servicers representing more than 90% of the mortgages in the country have signed up to participate in HAMP. And Treasury did something that we really appreciate and we're concerned about. They made HAPA a part of HAMP. So if the servicer is signed up for HAMP, they are automatically considered to be obligated to comply with the HAPA program. Now, that doesn't guarantee any one borrower, the current homeowner, is guaranteed a short sale under HAPA, but they are, under the terms of the program, guaranteed an analysis by the servicer to see if they qualify for a short sale. And we think that's very key because they're not going to have to go around the country and sign people up to participate.
That's right. Very good. So a lot of confusion as well. Fannie and Freddie specific, if the investor is Fannie and Freddie aren't participating in HAPA. Am I understanding this correctly, Jeff?
Well, they're not participating in it yet. And of course, they participate through their servicers. They are not dealing directly with the homeowner, but they have contracts with them, all the major servicers. And when the original guidelines were announced by Treasury on November 30th, they said the Fannie and Freddie loans aren't covered. They are going to be making some small changes to HAPA. And I started calling on December 1st, and I said, well, when are those changes going to come out? And we're a little worried about them because the whole idea here is uniformity. We don't want there to be very many differences between the regular HAPA program and the Fannie and the Freddie HAPA programs. So ever since December 1st, we have been 2 weeks away from seeing the tweaks from Fannie and Freddie. And now we're a week away. So, one of these days it's going to be true. I call every week, and we're getting close.
So what I'm hearing you say is one of these days Fannie Freddie are going to come out with their own, quote-unquote HAFA guidelines program, and we're anticipating it to be very similar, if not the same, as the existing HAFA program.
Yeah.
Is that?
Well, it won't be the same, but they are assuring me it's going to be very similar, but until I see it, I'm reserving judgment.
I understand. All right, so just to clarify this, I see this question coming in a lot. Can a seller not miss payments call their – who initiates a HAFA short sale? How does that work?
The servicer is supposed to evaluate borrowers who are unable to keep their home under the modification program that's known as HAMP, the loan modification program. Of course, everybody's first objective is to keep people in their homes if at all possible. This is good for the home, the community, the neighborhood, the housing market, not to have too many homes for sale. The home ownership is our goal. But if that just isn't possible, then once several things happen, the servicer or the lender has to consider that family for HAFA. And one of those things is that they just request a short sale or a deed in lieu. They do not have to be delinquent. They don't even have to go into a trial HAMP. But if they do go into a trial HAMP and don't meet the terms, if they don't complete the trial, if they miss two or more permanent HAMP payments, in other words, for whatever reason, they aren't able to keep their home, they do not comply with their duties under the HAMP program, or they can't get into the HAMP program, or they want to do a short sale or a deed in lieu, all those things trigger a review by the servicer of whether or not that borrower is a good prospect for a short sale.
Okay, so someone doesn't have to miss payments. They don't have to go through the loan mod process first. They can literally call up their lender, or the realtor can initiate the short sale and say, and then you said 90% of the lenders essentially are participating in HAFA. So that's, it can be initiated by the seller, obviously, the borrower, or it could be initiated by the realtor. And really, there doesn't have to be, they don't have to go through a loan mod or the rest of it to actually get started with this program.
Well, the servicer, I think, is supposed to make sure that that homeowner understands that they have a possible loan mod option.
Mm-hmm.
But if they do not, have to accept it. So if they have that conversation and they say, yes, I've just done, I want to move, I have another job, I want to do whatever it is, they have that option. But they will be considered for a modification.
Okay, it's important that the agents out there understand that a lot of people think that the borrower, in order to qualify for HAFA, has to have gone through a HAMP loan mod, a trial loan mod, and that is not the case. So please be clear on that. All right.
Good.
So what is the let's talk about paperwork involved in an FHA, or I'm sorry, in a HAFA short sale. I know one of the stated goals that you had for the HAFA originally was standardized paperwork. In other words, all lenders would use the same package of information. That is, as far as the paperwork, anything added, subtracted from the way short sales were done before with HAFA?
Well, yes, there are standard forms. And as I said, the servicer evaluates the borrower, and they'll take a look at the property, too, to see whether or not this is a short sale deal, whether it's going to make sense. If that property has six liens, maybe they're going to say it just isn't feasible. If the investor says, do not approve short sales, well, you're stuck because the entity that owns the mortgage gets to call the shots. But let's say that the servicer looks at the situation, decides that this is a good short sale opportunity. That's what triggers the uniform form called a short sale agreement. Typically, the servicer will fill that out. Now, I suppose a realtor or a seller could fill it out trying to get the ball rolling and get the attention of the servicer, but an awful lot of things in that short sale agreement in the end have to be identified by the servicer. And the key things are the net amount that they have to get in order to approve the short sale, and also the approvable closing costs, including the amount of the commission. Those will be specified in the short sale agreement up front before the property is marketed. Of course, there'll be some transition where properties have already been marketed, but in the fresh case, before the seller has an agent listing. So that's the first step, the short sale agreement. The servicer fills it out, sends it to the homeowner.
Makes sense. So does a property have to be listed with a realtor, or can a homeowner, say, for example, someone that's trying to sell it themselves at FSBO, use HAFA?
Yeah. Well, I'd like to say this is not a do-it-yourself, and I think Treasury was very wise to recognize that a short sale requires specialized expertise, and it doesn't have to be with a realtor, of course, but a real estate real estate agent licensed under the state laws, the homeowner is going to have to find a broker and list the property and work with an agent in order to sell their home under the HAFA program.
So So I hope all of you out there are paying attention to what he just said. As a lot of you know, most of your for sale by owners in your community are doing so right now because they are underwater in their homes and are don't know, frankly, what their options are. And now you could explain to them, literally knock on their door, call them, help them create a graceful exit from their underwater home, and tell them about HAFA. I mean, guys, if you're listening to this call, it sounds very technical. You know, Jeff and I are both about to start talking about something called a RAS, and he's talked about the SSA, you know, the short sale agreement, and all these terms. None of this stuff should intimidate you. This is all everything that we're talking about now is, frankly, very procedural. Follow the steps and understand the process. What you need to be thinking about as we're going through this call and answering all of your questions, or as many as we can get to, is how can you apply this information to helping people in your community? All right, so what the heck is a RAS form?
Well, we skipped over a few key steps because the short sale agreement leads to the seller deciding whether to approve it. The broker, real estate broker, has to sign it and agree to its terms, send it back, then they market the property. Once they get an executed contract, that's when this RAS form comes into effect. RAS is a terrible acronym, but it stands for something that makes sense. Requests for Approval of Short Sale. So that homeowner with the realtor or real estate agent gets that executed contract with a RAS. They submit it to the servicer. And they have to send all the addenda, the contract, and some proof that the buyer, prospective buyer, has some financial strength in order to actually close the deal. And that goes into the servicer for review and, you hope, approval.
Okay. So that, again, Jeff's right. I didn't go over all the specifics of the procedures. It's just because the procedures, really what they are, is essentially what the same exact process as it is now with a couple changes and with a couple different forms. Don't be intimidated by this. Frankly, I think for a lot of you, especially those of you who have been doing short sales for a long time at a high level, as I know a lot of you guys at Harris Real Estate University have been, you're going to see that following the HAFA guidelines is actually a streamlining in a lot of ways of the paperwork and the processes. So don't be intimidated by it. Just have an open mind. And like I said, keep focused on how you can use this information to help homeowners in your community. All right. So now this is something, Jeff, I know that you and I have talked about this a lot prior to this call. I've read a ton about this of just different realtors talking on, you know, all the active rain and the rest of it. So let's talk about the commission policy. I mean, there's been a lot of unnecessary confusion about the commissions handled under HAFA. It might be interesting if you feel comfortable talking about sort of the original HAFA guidelines and how they've changed and how there was, you know, some interesting little anecdotal things happening with realtors' commissions, if you feel that would be a valuable thing to talk about. But how are commissions?
Well, it might be valuable just because it explains that some of the things people are hearing might be relate to what the original November 30th announcement was, but then that changed on March 12th. And so that's the source of a lot of the confusion. So on November 30th, as far as commissions go, the proposal, although I don't think some Treasury staff knew what was in the guidelines, I should have said, one, it said in the short sale agreement, there's a blank there for commissions, and that amount is the amount in the listing agreement, but not more than 6%. Now, that changed, so don't count on that. It also said something, that sounds pretty good, but it said something horrible, which was the servicer can use an unspecified amount of the real estate commission to pay a negotiator hired by the servicer to, quote, help the real estate agent. Well, you know, we were on the phone right away, and it took months, but and we decided to work in sort of, you know, back channels, just in conversations with staff, and I was beginning to be a little nervous that we hadn't sent a big public letter to Secretary Geithner, but in the end it worked, and on March 12th, they announced the policy change. No longer would the Real Estate Commission be reduced and transferred over by the servicer to pay their negotiator. So that was a big success on March 12th. They did change something on commissions that a lot of people are unhappy about, and we know that. But there's a blank now for commissions, and the policy is the servicer identifies the customary and usual, reasonable and customary commission. I don't even know what the exact words are.
I read it too.
They come up with it. And so we went to Treasury and said, look, there is no such thing because there's competition on commissions and so forth. And they said, look, we never meant to cut out the servicer. Sometimes there may not be enough money in the deal for them to pay six and have it work. So So if you take five, it can be a short sale. If you do six, it's a foreclosure. So, you know, they made that point. They also made the point that this is information known up front. This is not a situation where you do all that work, like now, and then 2 days before the closing, they say, oh, you represent both sides? Well, I know your listing agreement says six or five, but we're only going to give you one and a half. That's the latest story I heard. So in many ways, it's better than the current situation. Plus, if they put in three, you do not have to take three. You can negotiate that. You can say, no, I will not do this for less than five. I am skilled. I am an expert. I can get this job done. I can save you a lot of money, but I won't work for less than five, and see what happens. It's a matter of negotiation.
Well, it's no different than the way commissions have been handled really since the beginning of time, you know?
Okay.
I mean, you have to justify, you're going to have to sometime negotiate. Sometimes it's going to be an issue, sometimes it's not going to be an issue. Those of you who've been in the industry for a long time, you know how to overcome commission objections. Jeff, I don't have any indication yet from any of our students if the lenders are going to be making this a major issue. I suspect they won't because they need us.
Too early to know, I think.
Yep.
They do need you, absolutely.
Yeah, the lenders basically are, if they don't have realtors working on their behalf, and they're in some serious trouble because it takes realtors out there to initiate these things. I mean, Jeff, what's the statistic, like the number on how much less a short sale is costing a lender versus a foreclosure?
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about that yesterday. It's staggering.
The numbers are staggering. On a typical house, it's going to be $50,000 to $100,000. Worse if the lender goes ahead with foreclosure. What often happens is it becomes vacant. Immediately the values in the neighborhood go down, which becomes a downward spiral. The property is just not going to be kept up. With a vacant property, the risk of vandalism is huge, as we all have heard the stories about stripped copper, stripped electrical, all of that. So when that happens, you could even have bigger losses.
Well, I know in Las Vegas, where Julie and I live, every weekend you look on Craigslist and you see a bunch of people that are having sort of garage sales at their soon-to-be-vacant homes where they're selling out virtually everything that's sellable. So, you know, hopefully that type of thing is going to come to an end. And I this is worth mentioning, Jeff, because I think, you know, you and National Association of Realtors, again, need recognition for this. The original HAFA agreement that you guys, you know, that came out the 12th, or when we had it amended, who put that in there with regards to realtors' commissions being, you know, essentially reduced to pay for the bank's negotiators? Obviously, the banks put that in, right?
Well, I was not privy to the conversations between Treasury and the banks, but I'm sure that was a conversation between the announcement date of May 14th of the outline of the program and the details on November 30th. My assumption was Treasury was negotiating with the servicers to make this program one that the servicers and lenders could accept, and pretty clearly that's how that happened. But I don't know it for a fact, but it doesn't take a rocket scientist.
It's safe to say, that's right.
Safe to say, yes.
Had it not,
I could
been
be wrong.
The
Nobody sue me, but, you know, that's my guess.
That's right. But had it not been for the National Association of Realtors, I mean, intervening on that and protecting our commissions, guys, open up your eyes to the fact what the National Association of Realtors is doing for us in the industry. You know, obviously they're our association, but they are having to go to bat for us on more ways than we can possibly imagine, especially in this housing climate. So just keep that in mind next year when you pay your annual fees. All right, so let's see. Next question that we have is reasonable. Okay, we talked about that. I'm back to my questions. Julie, anything come to mind as I'm going through my questions?
A couple of people have asked if any of this affects the tax ramifications for their sellers.
Well, you know what, Julie? Let's get to that question in a second. I'm reading an IM you just sent me, and you sent me a very interesting note here. You've heard that Bank of America, since we were sort of on the commissions thing here, has actually done something. Why don't you talk about that,
Julie? So, Jeff, this is Julie. Right out of the mouth of one of our graduate students who is doing a lot of short sales, she lives in Florida. And, of course, a lot of the condos that she is selling have had some really serious depreciation. We're talking about condos that used to be $200,000 are now selling for $35,000, $45,000. And so she heard on a call that we had on our blog that Bank of America will allow $3,000 minimum commissions. And she hasn't done a Bank of America deal yet, but she has successfully negotiated into one of these lesser expensive condos, a $3,000 commission with GMAC. She's currently working on one with Wells Fargo. What do you know about that in terms of minimum commissions on some of these really inexpensive properties? Is there any discussion about that from your end?
Well, this was news to me until this morning, and I think it's an encouraging sign. At the moment, it's not a half a short sale because they do have a, a 6% cap on the amount of that commission. So,
Technically that would break that.
So technically it would break that, and I think that's an excellent thing for Treasury to consider. But in any case, keep in mind that HAF is not the only short sale program. All the banks have their own short sale programs.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they'll be inspired by HAFA to identify the net proceeds that they require to approve the short sale up front for their other short sales. And so the advantage of the HAFA structure will spill over, we can hope, into all short sales. And then you can do the junior lien holder incentive can be higher than the cap in HAFA. The commission can be higher. I mean, if that's what the first mortgage holder is willing to do, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So, guys, it's not all we have to acknowledge the fact that when, you know, the banks do something to make the process better, the servicers do something to make the process better. That's an example that Julie's talking about. You know, they're actually raising the commission in some cases to get some of these properties sold. So let's get back to the specifics with regards to the paperwork, Jeff. So a half a short sale has an SSA, which is essentially a short sale agreement. And
right.
According to the HAFA guidelines, if I understand this correctly, the initial listing agreement is 4 months. Is that correct?
I never thought of it as being in the listing agreement, but of course it is in the listing agreement too. But the short sale agreement gives the homeowner and the broker an initial 4 month period to sell the property.
Initial,
can be extended.
Being the key word
an initial,
there.
That's right. So that's 4 months. So the example I use is, if you do have a completely inactive market, there are no buyers, there's no lookers, there's no sales, there's nothing going on, and the real estate agent, not a realtor, I'm sure, is really not doing much, then maybe they're not going to extend the 4 month period. But if you've got a market that's starting to heat up, there's been a lot of some offers, they're not quite high enough, but the prices are trending up. You go in and you make your case to the servicer, look, I can sell this thing, I need 3 more months or I need however much more. The program allows that extension for a total of 1 year, including the initial 4 months.
Okay, so Harris Real Estate University, CDPDs, all the rest of you out there, wake up to the fact that for the foreseeable future, short sales are going to be one of the best types of listings to have because for a lot of reasons, they're going to the buyers, the investors are going to be looking for them. As I know in the past, starting really in 2007 when short sales started to become so dominant in the country, agents, buyers, sellers, everyone wanted to avoid them. But now just the opposite is going to happen because of this HAFA program. Now, be clear on this. You should be seeking to help as many underwater homeowners as possible create a graceful exit. List their homes via short sale. Use this information. I don't care if you have one listing or 100 listings. You should be thinking to yourself right now about all the opportunity there is in your marketplace right now. And just to put this in perspective, and this was kind of a surprising number for those of you who like numbers, the home sales for January of 2010 came out nationwide. Something like 29% of all sales in the country were distressed. They're short sales or REOs. I'm seeing no reason to believe that that trend is going to reverse. Jeff, do you?
Not in the immediate future.
Yeah.
In fact, there's some thought that the REO universe is going to get much larger because they've been processing people for HAMPs, and some of them are, clearly now there's going to be a certain number that don't qualify, and they're going to move on to HAFA, and if that doesn't work, and deed in lieu doesn't work, then they're going to be going into REO. So both of those categories should continue to grow.
And to Jeff's point, we talked about this on the blog, timandjulieharris.com, that some lenders are anticipating as much as a 600% increase, 600% increase, in REO inventory towards the end of this year into 2011. So you better believe that these lenders are going to be anxious to get as many of these homes sold via that HAFA program to avoid all the costs that they have associated with doing an REO. All right, so now let's get into the more specifics, an interesting aspect of HAFA. The servicer has to state I'm getting a little out of track here. So how long does the servicer have to approve or disapprove the RAS?
And let's just remind people what a RAS is. That's when you get your executed sales contract signed by the buyer and the seller. You send it in with a request for approval of short sale. On paper, the servicer has 10 days to approve. Now, I know that's unbelievable number, but at least it gives you something to complain about. Let's say they do the 15 or 20 days or 30 days. You can say, look, it was due in 10 days. We met your net proceeds. All the closing costs are approvable. The buyer has promised not to flip it for 90 days. All those various rules, and it's really complicated, but you can go to that servicer and say, time to act. Let's get this job done.
So they have 10 days, and of course...
10 days, but, yeah.
Yeah, well, as Jeff is, alluding, let's just deal with reality here.
Yep.
Will the lenders abide by the 10 days? Not necessarily. And if we see that this is 30 days from now, if we see this is a chronic violation with different servicers, remember, as Jeff said, a servicer is essentially the bank. You've got to let the National Association of Realtors know so they can take it directly to Treasury and say, hey, guys, this is a guideline. These banks agreed to this guideline, and they're not following it. It's your job as an agent to put your association to work for you. So here's another interesting aspect. Once let's say the RAS has been approved, request to approve short sale is RAS again. The closing time, how long?
Yeah, at least 45 days. You can close sooner if you want, but they cannot rush you any quicker than 45 days.
Okay. Now, another interesting aspect of HAFA, which is really great for those of us who have been in the short sale space for a long period of time, is if the half, if the, the RAS isn't approved, in other words, if the bank says, no, we don't want the contract, they actually have to state the reasons why, correct?
That's right. And that's
right, so,
pretty unusual, I think,
absolutely.
In the current market, yeah.
Well, the typical reply is basically, well, we're not going to approve it, and, then the number came in too high or too low. What would be some of the reasons why a RAS would be rejected?
Well, the first most important one is that the number's not high enough. And by the way, let's say that they say, to approve this, we need a net proceeds of $200,000, and your best offer after closing costs and commission gives them $190,000. Doesn't mean you have to give up. I would go in and say, look, we've marketed this. Here's the comparative market analysis. Here's the recent sales. Here is everything. $190,000 is really a good deal. This is the best you're going to get, and it's going to save you money compared to a foreclosure. Try to get them to do it. They can say yes. They can say no. But at least you have that opportunity. There are lots of other conditions, and for all these terms and conditions, by the way, we have a short sales page, realtor.org/short sales, all one word with an S at the end. And you can say, I did a video, we've got some frequently asked questions, a brochure, and a link to the forms themselves. So you'll be able to really dig into it and get the details. But let's say you forgot to assign the to submit the addenda to the sales contract. Well, that's grounds for disapproval. What if the mortgage insurer didn't approve, or one of the second liens didn't release the lien? Well, that's grounds for disapproval. All the conditions of the program have to be met, or else the servicer can't disapprove it.
Again, guys, a lot of the things he's talking about are the same reasons that normal short sale offers don't get approved. Prior to HAFA, if you didn't submit a complete package, if you didn't submit an executed contract, all the other things that are required, it's the same thing. Hopefully, all the Harris Real Estate University students have been doing it correctly for long enough that what you're going to see is HAFA actually requires less paperwork, not more. And something else I'm going to suggest to all of you, one of the stumbling blocks, is especially for those of you who have not been earned your CDPD, often a stumbling block, as Jeff said, out of the gates, is basically the number, the price on the contract not being in alignment with what the lender thinks the property is worth based on their BPO. So when that happens, you've got to confront the lender about that and say, listen, if the BPO that they have, the number that they have in mind, is not a true reflection on the market, you're going to have to put on your realtor negotiating hat, hopefully all of you remember what that is, and actually convince the lender to order another BPO. And oftentimes, well, let me scratch that, every time when you submit your short sale offer, your package, send them a BPO. I'm not saying they'll use it. They certainly won't replace your BPO with the one that they order, but that will oftentimes be used in consideration, especially if the numbers are different. Again, guys, this goes into the whole negotiating aspect that all of you hopefully are going to be very comfortable with regards to short sales. So, Jeff, we have an absolute ton of questions. Is there anything that you want to mention or talk about before I get to some of these questions before we jump in?
No, why don't you go ahead?
Okay.
I mean, there's some other points. I mean, and if you want to remind me of something you think would fit here, feel free.
Well, we didn't go over in a large bit of detail over the specifics of the package and the other mm-hmm. aspects of the paperwork. If there's anything that I skipped over that you think that
right.
you want to bring out, please do.
Well, the main thing is, I think that the reality is, this is not enough for you to know enough how to do a half a short sale. There's going to be lots and lots of detail. You're going to just have to get into the forms. One important reason is that the real estate broker is going to have to sign the short sale agreement. The real estate broker is not a party to that agreement, but he does or she does agree that it controls over the listing agreement, for example, and they agree to comply with the terms of the short sale agreement, including the amount of the commission, by the way. So it's very important that everyone involved on the real estate agent broker side really take these requirements seriously. And I know it's going to be hard. I know it's a government program with incredible complexity, but the reality is there's no way around it if you're going to really succeed in HAFA.
That's right. So, it's a paperwork. There's a lot of paperwork to know and to understand. There's procedures that are required with this. Except the fact, guys, that if you're working with negotiators now that are not yet familiar with HAFA, even though their parent lender servicer is on the list of companies or of banks that are participating in HAFA, be patient. This just started this month. This is going to be a transition process from the way the lenders were doing the process before to following new HAFA guidelines. What we suspect is there's going to be a lot of mistakes made. There's going to be a lot of misunderstandings. That is the nature of a market like this. Just be patient. Be the expert. When you have any questions, obviously reach out and ask questions. Julie, you have some questions that you got in from some of the students.
Yes, Gary in San Diego wants to know, is there an easy way to know if the lender they're dealing with is participating in the HAFA program?
Yes, there is. We put a link on our HAFA page. If you go to realtor.org/short sales and then go to a link on that page, and it's not that complicated a page, to the HAFA page, that's where you get the link to the government page that will let you find out everybody who signed up for HAMP. And remember, everybody that signed up for HAMP is automatically considered signed up for HAFA. It's unfortunately
okay, so it's
about
searchable.
Three links, but it is searchable. That you can actually click and say list all servicers. Once you get to that government page, there's no way for us to give you the list directly. But the government page has a link to list all servicers, and you click on that, and there they are in alphabetical order.
Okay, perfect. And just so our students know, if you're in our short sale class, you're a CDPD student, we're going to take exactly what Jeff just said and give you specific instructions. We'll post those links. We'll make it as easy as possible for you to search out who's participating.
Great.
Gail from Somerville, New Jersey. Is it true that for HAFA, the homeowner is also signing a deed in lieu as part of the required upfront paperwork? And she mentioned a local real estate attorney is saying that that's the case.
If that is the case, I did not understand that to be the case.
I don't think it's the case.
I don't think it's the case. I don't think you have to go both routes simultaneously.
Nope.
If the HAFA doesn't work, then they turn to the deed in lieu.
Well, the deed, but so procedurally,
right?
Jeff, and please correct me if I'm wrong on
that. Yeah, well,
you
won't be wrong. You're never wrong.
Don't tell me, please.
Yeah, you better check with Julie on that one. All right, so as far as this works, if the HAFA short sale doesn't work out, then the seller is given the option to do the deed in lieu. But can a seller just basically say, I want a deed in lieu, I don't even want to try to short sale it?
I think they can. They can ask for either one.
Okay.
I don't know why
so,
not.
Well, that's my understanding,
yeah,
too. So why would a seller want to do a short sale over a deed in lieu? Well, why would – I mean, obviously, with the deed in lieu, they essentially don't have to, you know, go through the process of selling it, and it's a lot quicker process.
That's right. It's a lot quicker, and that's the main reason.
Well, where's the incentive for the homeowner to actually want to do a short sale over a deed in lieu?
Well,
there's not an easy answer to that.
I'm not sure what the answer is to that. I mean, I think both of them, create problems with your credit scores,
yep,
depending on how current you are on all of your other bills, for example, and whether or not you've stayed current to the point of this housing crisis.
Well, deed in lieu, credit-wise, this is something we know something about. Is the same basically as a foreclosure. So even though it's sometimes called a friendly foreclosure, it's still a foreclosure. So in a lot of cases, those of you who are working with folks that need security clearances, there's so many different ways that credit is used anymore. People applying for jobs, I mean, all kinds of different things. It matters. So that's the reason that someone's going to want to do a short sale. And I suspect, only guessing, but I suspect that the lenders are going to try to incentivize people to do short sales more than a deed in lieu, because obviously then the goal is for them to net more money. Julie?
Okay, several questions. If there is anything specific on HAPA deals for new buyers being able to flip a property that they purchased as a HAPA deal, kind of a extendo mm-hmm. question there, but are there any flipping or non-flipping rules?
Yeah, you can't flip for 90 days.
90 days, right? Okay,
90
good.
Days.
So that's still the case.
Yep.
Lots of questions about how to get these forms, guys. We're going to give you instructions on how to do that. And
yep.
the website.
And the link is on our site, of course, too.
Realtor.org/short sales. All right.
Here's
Let's
an interesting
see.
Question. I'm going through the questions, Jules. Let me ask this one. Jeff, someone asking about the first-time homebuyer tax credit, not a HAPA issue. To talk about that briefly, that's obviously
sure.
something that you guys have been
sure. You need to have a binding contract to qualify for the tax credit by the end of April, and you have to close by the end of June. And the question has come up, well, comes up every single day, actually. What happens if we get our binding contract submitted to the lender for approval, but the lender doesn't approve it until after the end of April, but you still close by the end of June? And the answer is, well, we think that there are arguments that that's a binding contract, and certainly that's something for you to consider with on your own. We can't give you that tax or legal advice. We've raised it with IRS and through Treasury and asked Treasury to ask IRS to expedite it, but IRS is on IRS time. And whether or not they're going to have that answer before the end of April, I don't know. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people anxious about whether or not they're going to qualify, and they're going to have to decide whether to fill out those forms and perhaps put in the full disclosure right on their forms and file for the credit or whatever their advisors recommend that they do. I mean, I'm not telling anybody what to do, but we recognize it's a serious problem, and we're trying to get a definitive answer from the IRS, the only one that matters here.
Have you seen any or heard of any indication that the buyer credit's going to be extended beyond?
No, I don't think there's any real serious talk. Last time it was extended, there were a lot of conversations about this is a very expensive credit and depending on the situation, this may be the last time. And I think that at the moment, I do not think that there's a lively discussion about extending the credit at this point. That could change if the market changes, but at the moment, that's where we are.
That's right. Julie?
I'm going through these questions.
A lot of them are the same.
Yeah, a lot of them are the same.
They are.
A lot of confusion still about the
deed. Well, a lot of confusion. I guess, Julie, as I'm going through these questions, I don't even know mm-hmm. how many. It was like over 400. But most of the questions I'm seeing are concerning lenders that are still demanding promissory notes or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, guys, I'm going to say this again. And, again, Jeff, if I say this wrong, please correct me. But if they're participating in HAPA, first and second lien holders, guys, cannot ask for any sort of payback outside of closing, cash at closing, any Mickey Mouse like that. And this is very, very important, one of the best, most beautiful aspects of HAPA, if you ask us, when the lenders are participating in HAPA, they have to agree to not go after the borrower for any sort of deficiency judgment afterwards. And the old way of doing it is you guys had to negotiate out the deficiency judgment threat from looming over the seller's head. And depending on your state, maybe that was a problem, like in Arizona and I know in California, if it was a purchase money, there was no real worry about that because there was non-recourse. But anyway, bottom line is, under HAPA, the deficiency thing is really off the table. That's a huge difference. So those of you who are having problems with these lenders still trying to weasel some sort of payback from these lenders or from these borrowers and they're participating in HAPA, you might want to correct that behavior. So Jeff, this is an interesting question. We talked about this before. If a realtor comes across a lender that is indeed participating in HAPA but not following the HAPA guidelines, what would you like them to do?
Mm-hmm. I'd like them to let me know. When we met with Treasury, we said, well, what do we do? How do we, we need some kind of system for raising concerns about the way HAPA is being implemented and concerns about lenders violating the program. And they said, let us know, and we will deal with it. And so the only way for me to help our members is for our members to continue to do what they've been doing for 2 years, which is send me an email, or call me up, let me know what's going on, and we will consolidate that. And if I get 10,000 calls, I won't be returning all of them. But at the moment, I'm able to keep up, just barely, with the help we're getting from our members alerting us to the problems in this area. And that's the key. I can't sit here inside the Beltway and guess what's going on. I depend on our members to let me know so I can protect all of the members. So thank you for that.
Harris Real Estate University students, we're going to be creating a very specific, easy-to-understand button on the website, on our blog, which is going to allow you to essentially file a complaint against a half a participating lender if they're not following the guidelines. And what I'm going to do is basically take all those comments and I'm going to forward them to Jeff once a week. But we'll be talking more about that so that he can take that information directly to Treasury. As I said, guys, this is our gateway. Jeff is our exact or our specific voice for talking with Treasury. So if you have any frustrations with these banks, if they're not following the guidelines, tell us, we'll tell them, or tell him directly. Julie?
Yeah, so what I hear you saying throughout this interview, Jeff, is that really pretty much everything is still potentially negotiable. And I just get this feeling from you, very obviously realtor-friendly, and to not give up. The banks, you said it, banks need us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so just because something gets bounced back from the servicer saying, hey, you know what, we need $5,000 or $10,000 more, that doesn't mean that that's set in stone. We've got to remind all of our agents that they negotiate for a living sometimes and to not be intimidated by these banks.
Well, that's right.
Jeff, I'm curious, the calls that you're getting from members right now,
mm-hmm.
are they complaining? Is there anything that we didn't cover on this call that is worth mentioning that you're hearing?
Well, at the moment we're in the confusing stage of, well, half is out, and they're assuming that the banks are doing short sales under half. And I think that to a large extent that is not the case, especially if it's an ongoing situation where they've been working on the short sale for months, and April 5th was the deadline for complying with HAPA. So that is one of the areas that, as you mentioned, patience. I mean, I've started using that word even in Washington reports. You know, patience will be required. April 5th was the deadline. Clearly, the servicers are playing catch up. They're still training their front office staffs. We still get calls where they say, well, I called the servicer and told them about HAPA because, you know, I've done a better job helping realtors get the information they need than the lenders have. And that what they hear is, well, I don't know what half is. What are you talking about? And this is what, you know, and then they try to stick with the same old, same old. So, you know, we're going to be educating the servicers and hopefully they're going to be doing it themselves much better than they have so far.
So I heard Jeff say that he is hearing your voice loud and clear in the halls of the National Association of Realtors and taking your complaints directly to the Treasury Department.
Yeah, so I submitted seven questions about half of this morning to Treasury, so I've started that process. And the tax question went weeks ago.
Okay, good.
So, excuse me, I interrupted you, Tim. But
No. You said it well. But I think it's really important that they know that what your specific role is and what the National Association of Realtors and how active that you guys have been at in D.C., trying to streamline and essentially streamline and the short sale process. And, again, giving credit where credit is due, again, we sincerely thank you for that. Julie, are there any other questions we didn't cover? I can't believe how many – there's probably seven different
questions
they're asking.
Lots of questions asking, yes, if there's any discussion going on about investment properties. You know, HAPA is for the primary residence, people under 729, 750.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what about all of this glut in some of the markets like Las Vegas and Miami and – some of the areas where there was an overabundance of condos, for example, and there's all of these investment properties. Is there any discussion of a HAPA-type program for investor properties?
No, I haven't heard anything about that, and that's where I hope that if the HAPA program starts to work and the lenders see the advantage of it, they apply the principles to their other short sales programs for investors and even for other homeowners where HAPA doesn't quite fit, because you know, they don't meet the threshold requirements under HAMP. But you know, the government is going to be focusing on homeowners, you know, and the principal residences. And I wouldn't hold my breath for an investor HAPA program.
Mm-hmm. Really interesting.
But never say never. But I haven't heard anyone talk about that.
So, Julie, you had a question about I saw this one come in. You set it aside about realtors doing BPOs.
Ah, yes. This is something that we hear almost on a daily basis from agents. There is a large amount of confusion out there whether they're allowed to do BPOs, whether NAR is okay with that. Most of this comes from office managers, from other agents saying, oh, I heard that was illegal. So I'm here to ask you on this call, what is your opinion of agents doing BPOs? Because there's certainly plenty of BPO business out there.
Well, NAR is a big ten, and we support our members who choose to do BPOs. Of course, it has to be consistent with state law, and there are restrictions at the state law level on BPOs. But appraiser groups wrote Secretary Geithner back, I don't know, early March or the end of April, suggesting that valuations under HAFA should be done with the full appraisal. And we responded with a letter to Geithner and HUD Secretary Donovan saying BPOs are appropriate, and there's been a lot of misinformation about them. There's no reason to think that they are less valid or useful than appraisals, and they're widely accepted, and they have established reliability and accuracy. You may tell that I'm reading from the letter we wrote on March 12th. So, you know, suddenly I'm sounding stiff and formal. Anyway, so we definitely are interested in allowing our members to do BPOs where they choose to do so and where state law permits it.
That's excellent. Right, and I think it's probably something like, Julie, you know, you might know this, I think it's like 40 out of the 50 states out there have no issues whatsoever with realtors doing BPOs, so... You know, it's interesting, and sometimes the things that realtors hear versus what the truth is. So, guys, be careful that when you have the issues and questions like this, don't just rely on what you heard. Actually, spend a little time and research it. So Jeff, let's wrap this call up. And as I asked you this call yesterday or this question yesterday when we spoke, as a realtor, someone, you know, the realtors that are listening to this call, Harris Real Estate University has thousands of students. What can we be doing as a group to help you, and what can we be doing to help National Association of Realtors now with regards to HAFA? Is there anything else that we should be doing that we should be aware of to reinforce what you guys are trying to do inside the Beltway?
Well, we touched on it already, but it bears repeating, which is that I can't solve a problem I don't know about. I can't always solve a problem, but I can't even try if I don't know about it. So I depend on our members to stay in touch with me, to send us emails. Feel free to work through your state and local associations, through Harris Real Estate University, where we can get some consolidated results, because there's only one of me here, and I've got other jobs to do, like GSE reform and financial restructuring.
He's being very polite and saying, please don't flood his email box.
That's right, but so far I have kept up and managed to get the rest of my work done. But don't be shy. You know, I'm not very hard to find on Google. You know, my name and HAFA will get you, you know, enough hits to hit something with a email address in it. So I just encourage you that if you see a problem, there's no way for me to try to fix it unless I know about it. And don't be shy.
That's right. So, guys, all of us have to work together to truly be the hope for homeowners. It's your individual responsibility as a realtor to understand that your first and foremost goal should be to help people solve a problem. And when you learn the skills necessary to perform that function, you're not going to have any problem whatsoever finding business. There's so many people out there. If you listen to Elizabeth Warren from the Congressional Oversight Committee not too far from where Jeff is now, she's predicting there could be up to 15 million REOs coming to market over the next few years. Now, let's hope it's not that bad. Let's hope a lot of these homes can be sold via a short sale process prior. But the bottom line is there is truly in this marketplace an enormous opportunity to help homeowners and, frankly, help yourselves. Focus on short sales. Focus on helping homeowners have a graceful exit. Help them through this process. A lot of times you're going to be dealing with people that have never dealt with this level of stress before. You're not only dealing with someone who's having probably financial issues, you're dealing with people that are having to move. I mean, guys, just understand that there never has been and never will be another time when caring, competent, and skilled realtors have been so needed. So, Jeff, on behalf of Julie and myself and all the faculty and staff and students of Harris Real Estate University, again, I want to sincerely thank you for your time today. You've been very gracious answering all my questions and emails and the rest of it, and I really do appreciate the opportunity to have had this teleconference with you.
Well, I'm really happy to have had the opportunity, and thank you for helping get the word out on HAFA. It's so important.
So thank you for everyone for joining us today. Hopefully we have given you enough encouragement, education, motivation to go out there and make a difference in your community. So again, on behalf of Julie and myself and all the faculty and staff here at Harris Real Estate University, thank you for joining us for today's Harris Real Estate University National Association of Realtors HAFA event. Have a wonderful day.